back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and this time out, it is the return of the hair metal hero, who has not been on this show for, I don't remember the last time.
Oh, and it's good to be back.
Just to make it, you know, somewhat unique, there's not going to be an issue of Sleepwalker this time out.
Yeah, well, like I always say, the sooner I'm done with it, the sooner there's less reason for me to be around, so...
Less reason for you to be around.
On the show.
Sounds kind of ominous.
On the show.
We'll work with that as the premise. Okay. How have you been, Chris?
Life is peaks and valleys, but, you know, I'm here. I'm talking about comics. I'm losing weight. And, yeah, I always have a good time BSing about stuff that's 30 plus years old, just like me, 40 plus years old, and just enjoying the fun that comes along with talking about old floppy issues of comics.
Well, let's be realistic. There's a reason I've been doing this show now for I don't know exactly how long. I think it's about 13 years. So,
oh God, yeah.
I would not be doing it that long if I didn't love talking
exactly.
about comics.
Yeah. And, I love talking about old comics. Stuff from the last 15, 20 years, I don't care.
Well, every once in a while we come up with... Well, first of all, the general rule on the show is the book has to be at least 10 years old to talk about it. Now, that means
sense.
We are now able to talk about books that came out after I started doing this show.
Oh.
But every once in a while we hear about like a new book or a new series that gets some accolades and it's like, oh, you need to check this one out. So, you know, we've done that a few times where we've broken the rules, but for the most part, you know, I am a guy who has lived in the silver and bronze ages of comics for just about my entire, collecting time, which has been now upwards of 50 years.
Yeah, there you go. I'm getting close to 50 years myself, so, you know, that's all right.
No, I'm talking about 50 years of collecting.
I know, but I'm just saying my own vintage is, you know, I'm closer to 50 than I am to 35 now, so. Yeah.
Something to be said about that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Still here. Can't get rid of me. I'm like a gum under your shoe.
Yeah, same with me. They try. Trust me, they try.
Yeah.
But you know, I was at I went to the local show, which is, you know, for the most part monthly. They do it the third Sunday of every month. Next month they're going to skip it because the third Sunday is Easter.
Oh, there you go.
But you know, generally the third Sunday of every month. So, you know, I picked up a few books. I put them on the Facebook page. But the key that I got. And I was surprised to find it at least at a reasonable price, not cheap, but reasonable, was Iron Fist number 14 with the first appearance of Sabretooth.
Oh, nice.
That's one that, you know, I keep seeing it for crazy dollars. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't cheap, but it was much, much more reasonable. So I was happy
that closes out
that series for me.
I'm sure buying it when there's not a media tie-in with that character probably helps.
Yeah, if they had an announced X-Men movie that was going to feature the character, you know, then I probably wouldn't be able to find it at a reasonable price. But it's funny, I went to the show last month as well, and I stopped by a stand, and they had it on their, you know, their wall that they have at the convention. And I said, you know, let me look at this, and he let me look at it, and it was a little faded on the cover, and he's cop to it immediately. He said, "Yeah, it's got a little sun fade in it, so, you know, we're not going for crazy money. We're looking for like $100 for it, which honestly, prices I see on eBay, that's not a crazy price."
No, and I mean, I can't really argue because I mean, I've really been throwing my discretionary spending into collecting records, and I went to a record show last month, and like forget about comics on the wall. At a vinyl fair, Jesus, I was like, no, there's a couple of keys up there that I want, but like not for that money. I can hold
especially
out
when
repress.
You're looking at, especially when you, I am surprised because I'm not into it personally, but one of my good friends is the metal stuff goes for Bucks.
Well, I mean, punk and metal, those guys didn't sell their records. They kept them all. That's part of the problem. And I'm a big Kiss fan. I'm a big 80s Kiss fan. And of course, one of the 80s records that I want has very few repressings. I mean, there was an original pressing at this vinyl fair I went to, and it was $400. I was like, no, I'm quite good. So if anybody has a copy of Hot in the Shade and they want to talk to me,
you can reach Chris through Facebook. He's available. But just to finish the story, I had walked away, and then I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, you know, I'm probably never going to find this book for about $100 again. You know, if I'm going to hold out and I'm going to say I need this thing in, you know, pristine condition, then they're going to want, you know, like much more than $100. Oh, yeah. So I went back to that stand, and it was gone.
Oh, no!
So I said, that's it. I'm never going to find this at a reasonable price again. So yesterday I walked into the show. First table I went to, they had it, and I got it for less than that $100, and it's less beat up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not big on slabbing a book, but geez, where you kind of told that story, it's like, you might as well send that one in to get graded. You know?
I'm very anti-slab, as I'm sure
I am
you
too,
know.
But
what I've done is, to adopt to that, or adapt to that, more or less, is I've bought these reusable slabs.
Okay.
On you know, from Amazon, and they're not cheap either. I think they're like they come out to like about $20 a piece.
I mean,
for the more key books in my collection, you know, say my Hulk 181, my Spider-Man 129, and quite a few others but those are probably like my biggest keys. My giant size X-Men number one. You know, I put them in there. I don't rely on whatever CBC to grade them, because, you know, screw them. I could go on and on and on about it, but I think it's a total conflict of interest that the higher they grade it, the higher they value it, and the higher they value it, the more they charge you to slab it.
Yeah, it's capitalism. And again, if there's clearly enough people out there that are still in the speculator or the holding on to it for investment purposes market that have made it something. I mean, because they're doing the same thing with video games now, which is it's asinine to me. And, you know, it's baseball cards, same thing. Like, you got it. Yeah. You got a Babe Ruth card. You got a Cy Young card. You got Honus Wagner. I get it. Get it appraised. But I mean, Jesus, for anything that came out from the 70s afterwards, what's the point? You know,
but the market is bearing it to date so far, though. When they have, you know, the slabbed issues, even if, you know, if you have like a 5.0 copy of, you know, whatever, and you have one that's raw and you have one that's slabbed, there's no question in my mind the slabbed one is going for more money. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the difference in cost of slabbing it. It's going for more money, I guess, based on the thought that, you know, nothing could happen to it now and all of this other stuff.
Yeah.
But then I'm getting the same effect by having it in my reusable slabs.
True.
And one of my thoughts is, one day when I'm not here anymore, at least my kids are going to know, hey, those ones that are in those plastic, those are probably expensive. I shouldn't just sell them for 25 cents each.
Right. So, I mean, unless they're going to make a deal with Professor Allen. So,
yeah, well, yeah, that's always a possibility.
I mean, I guess it's no different than if you took your stuff to the, you know, Antiques Roadshow and you're getting something professionally appraised. But again, it does suck some of the enjoyment out of it, you know, like, and it's the same with records, like, you know, anything like that, anything that anybody wants to collect or to enjoy is going to have that problem. But
I have two professionally slabbed books in my collection. One is, I was looking to complete my collection of the Forever People, the DC Kirby series, and I didn't have a copy of number one.
And that's the only way you could get it.
I was following it on eBay, and I'm seeing copies of it for $75, $80, whatever, and, you know, I'm just kind of hanging out. And then I found a slabbed copy. I think it was like a 5.0, so it's, you know, middling condition. And it was $40. It cost you about $40 just to slab the damn thing. So I was like, you know what, I'll take that one.
Yep.
So I have that one. And then as a gift from friends, I received a slabbed copy of Iron Man 55, which is the first appearance of Thanos.
And
just one of my friends was just fishing for information, and he starts saying, you know, what's your Moby Dick? What's your great white whale that you're looking for? And I said, well, I guess, you know, Amazing Fantasy 15. So he immediately pushed me off that one. And then he starts saying, well, you know, what other ones are you looking for? And somehow when I got to Iron Man 55, he just, you know, he was satisfied. And then without me realizing it, that ended up being, what I ended up getting as a gift from my friends. So that was pretty cool.
And that's nothing to sneeze at. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And then to make things even more interesting, he gave me the True Believers copy that they come out with. It's a reprint of the issue.
Yeah.
So he you know, there was whatever, and when he was going to present me with the gift, he said, yeah, we let somebody who really didn't know about comics buy it, and we all chipped in, and this is what she came back with. And he gave me the True Believers issue. So it puts me in a position of saying, well, that's great. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then he broke out the slabbed copy of the real thing.
I mean, at this point, I'd probably just want to have a slabbed issue of the first appearance of the Thanos copter. That would be a little more fun. But hey, you know.
Is that in a Hostess ad?
I don't even remember now. Maybe. Doesn't matter. Just
well, let's look at books that where we well, I have one. I have the book that I'm doing, and it is not slabbed.
I have a copy of the book I'm doing. It is in the ether.
I have no idea what you're talking about. So let's jump into some books here, and I've been giving my guests the prerogative of whether they go first or I go first, whatever.
I might as well go first with this. Unfortunately I'll have to use a pre-written synopsis because, you know, it is what it is. I have picked Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures number 31. This is from April of 1992. This was the all ages series that sprung out of the cartoon. This is not the Mirage Comics Eastman and Laird's black and white gritty Ninja Turtles. And I could wax forever about all versions of the Ninja Turtles up until probably the most recent ones. But let me see if I can even get, I don't even know if I can get information on who wrote this. Jeez. It's really hard for these because I don't think they credit anybody in these.
Yeah, I'm taking a look now. Yeah, no, it's script edits Dean Clarane.
Yes.
Pencils Chris Allen. Inks Rod Olerenshaw. Actually, he did pages 1 through 11 and 23 through 30. Brian Thomas did pages 12 through 22. Letters Gary Fields. Colors Barry Grossman. And managing editor Victor Gorlick.
So these must all be Archie guys, because
yeah, I have no idea who any of them are.
Yeah, and this is under the Archie Comics. They had the license for the cartoon version, and they did a lot of stuff with this IP over many years. The cover has all four turtles in the sewer with April O'Neil and Splinter. Very different from even the cartoon interpretation of these characters. It's kind of Saturday morning, kind of not. They're all standing in a sewer. It's very dark, and they're looking intense and menacing. And then we actually open on the issue. And with this being an Archie book from the mid-90s, we're not going to get a lot of detail in the backgrounds here, just so that you know that going forward. But again, I'm jumping into this. I picked this at random. So this synopsis, I'm taking it as what it is, because I didn't even bother to read the issue before, because this is, we're going old school, pick a comic at random. So after the struggle against the demon Noitai Dar, our heroes seek activities to soothe their souls. Leonardo and Master Splinter train on a hillside. The sensei explains to Leonardo that a true swordsman must empty his mind of all thought when doing battle. There must be only flow. The swordsman must become one with his blade. Splinter has little trouble disarming and defeating his student, and Leo tries to take in the lesson before the two break for lunch. The pair join the other turtles, a character named Fu Sheng. He's an older sensei. Chu Si, Juicy, ha ha ha, April, Ninjara, and the girl Chien Khan, kidnapped from the previous issue. Then they have some sushi. Raph isn't happy about the menu, and he's never happy about anything. And Ninjara needles him by saying, "I thought you weren't afraid of anything." Leo notes that, and you also need to know that they are now in Japan for some reason. I don't know. So, which kind of makes sense that they eventually would get to Japan. Leo notes that Japan is where all of their lives began, essentially. It's the home of Master Splinter as well as the Foot Clan. And Splinter agrees and asks his students to explore their homeland so that they can better understand their teachings and origins. The turtles agree and ask where to begin, and Splinter tells them first to separate from one another. Mike joins the girl, and the two head off to fly a Japanese kite. Ninjara, she's a fox. She takes Raphael to visit some stone monuments. Donatello decides to check on how a containment process is going over at a nuclear power plant, and he chooses to go alone. Splinter asks Leo to continue his lessons. Fu Sheng, the old sensei, is left alone as April and Chu are wrapped in conversation. Ninjara and Raphael arrive at a shrine. The turtle wonders why there are so many crows around it, and Ninjara the fox explains that they're probably drawn to the dark power contained in the Torii, which is the structure that's there. Raph asks if these monuments are really gateways to a dimension filled with demons, and Ninjara assures him that it's true. The Torii are a gateway to the Yomi, or underworld, or land of gloom. Upon hearing this, Raph starts to feel compelled and drawn towards the structure, and Ninjara warns him to be careful as they contain mesmerizing power over those who are open to it. And Raph's always been the dark one. Even in the all ages versions, he's kind of the one who's still got the chip on his shoulder. Raph begins to stutter, and Ninjara orders him to let it go. And in the nick of time, a shaken Raph leans on the fox for support and thanks for her help. Ninjara notes that Raph has an affinity toward the Torii, and she tells him that she likes that. She likes the bad boys. Suddenly, the foxy ninja smells something on the wind. Some cologne. We see four human figures from the back in the shadows spying on the two mutants. Donatello, on his trek, is watching helicopters pouring cement on a nuclear power plant. The men are burying the radioactive plant in concrete the same way that Chernobyl was sealed. And again, you really wouldn't expect a Chernobyl reference in an all-ages Archie comic based on the Ninja Turtles. Don finds the solution somewhat pedestrian, but is impressed by the engineering involved. His thoughts are interrupted as two crows fly by, and then a strange white energy ball forms in front of him. Donnie wonders if it's an after-effect of the demon sorcery from the last issue, or of radiation from the plant. Leo and Splinter continue to train, but once again, Leo is unarmed. Splinter reminds him to be one with his sword. The turtle thanks his mentor, and the teacher thanks his student as the sun begins to set. Mikey and the young girl exchange haikus as they fly a large kite decorated with a yellow dragon. Feng Shu trains Chu Si to control the spirit of the warrior dragon. This guy can turn into a dragon. While April practices with her katana. After a time, Chu manages to shrink the gigantic form of the warrior dragon down to his normal height, and April's impressed by that. Back to Ninjara and Raph, they attack the people spying on them. It's the gang of young men from the sewer fight in the previous issue. Raph states that they mistakenly thought the turtles were allied with Chien Khan's ninjas, and I don't even know who that is. And one of the men incredulously declares, "Mistakenly, you keep company with the greatest thief in Japan." That's Ninjara the Fox. Donatello, back to him, watches the energy ball as it transforms into a massive floating yin-yang symbol, and it speaks to him, explaining that it is all things feminine as well as all things masculine, for it is the Tao. Don is bewildered at first, but then smiles and introduces himself. The yin-yang asks Donatello to follow it. It leads him up a mountain, and once he reaches the top, Donatello can see that the men have finished filling in the damaged nuclear power plant in the concrete that they've poured over the top is a yin-yang symbol. There is ebb, there is flow, the symbol explains. There is give, there is take. Every saving has its cost. Tao is all. And with yet that, the yin-yang symbol disappears. Raph and Ninjara put the finishing moves on their opponents. Raph wonders aloud why the men attacked them. And the last one standing notes, "It was you who attacked us. We came seeking," and we cut away. And April and Chu Si are they're sharing a kiss by moonlight. April breaks away and says that they need to slow down, and Chu agrees. He takes April by the hand, and the pair head off to join Fu Sheng for dinner. Leonardo and Master Splinter continue their training. The pair lunge at one another, and both their blades shatter upon impact. And that is the end of the issue. And I was as lost as a blind man at an orgy reading this, because I did not read the issue before. Again, I was not expecting some of what I got in this issue, because it was Archie's, it's under the Archie line, based on the cartoon. In the cartoon, if anybody has ever watched it, you know it was very child-friendly. And I don't have a problem with that. There's a Ninja Turtles for everybody. I loved that show to death, and that toy line to death. And if it's
well, you were the perfect age for that show.
I was 8 years old when the first cartoon came out. So
now I have a nephew who was the perfect age when that series first came out, and it was definitely at that point in my life definitely too childish for me. And if I had grown up with it, it's something that even though I would have outgrown it, I still would enjoy it for nostalgia purposes, probably. Yeah. But it didn't really do much for me. In the, I guess it's either, probably the early 2000s, there was a series on, I think it was on Fox.
Fox Kids. Fox Kids did a relaunch.
And I thought they did a real nice job with that. Because I remember watching it with my son and finding that was a much better all-age thing, because it wasn't so sophisticated or so much violence that a kid would be scared, but it had enough gravitas to it that an adult can watch it with him and enjoy it. Yeah. And I really enjoyed watching that with him.
I did. I enjoyed watching that too when that hit. And I wasn't expecting, I was like, oh, they're doing Ninja Turtles again. But they did the thing where let's take the best stuff from the all ages thing and let's take the best stuff that we can from the Mirage run and try to meld it together. I mean, that's probably my favorite animated version of the Turtles so far is that one.
I enjoyed watching that with him. I haven't seen it since then. Yeah. So I don't know how it's held up.
Kind of petered out at the end. I think they kind of, I don't know if they were waiting to get renewed and then they didn't get renewed and then stuff happened and they did a time jump and it's like, okay. But again, reading this issue, I'll just right off the bat, the art is serviceable. And again, Archie was cranking out a ton of books, not just Ninja Turtles. I mean, they had other IPs and they were a mainstay on your spinner rack at your convenience store for a long time. Because anybody could go in and grab your Archie book, you could grab your Ninja Turtles book right next to your Superman and your Spider-Man comics. And they sold a lot of issues. I mean, this run of just this was 72 issues. That's 6 years. Wow. I mean, for a licensed property, a license of a license, essentially. And then they had spinoffs as well and one shots and a whole bunch of other stuff. All the while, Peter Laird was still holding on to the Mirage version and doing what he wanted to do occasionally. And I think Kevin Eastman, too. They maintained the rights to put out what they wanted to when they wanted to at the time. So if there was still the adult version out there if you wanted it. But again, you're not expecting to do Japanese philosophy with the yin yang or the Tao. I wasn't expecting references to Chernobyl. And of course, if anybody was going to make that reference, it would be Donatello. For what this book was, the turtles are still the turtles in it. Leonardo is your classic anime protagonist. My reason for being is my reason for being. I must become greater than my sensei. Raphael still has a chip on his shoulder and likes to hang out with people that are potentially ne'er-do-wells because he's got the chip on his shoulder and he doesn't feel like he fits in anywhere. Donatello does machines. He's the scientist. And Michelangelo is the baby and the fun one and the young one who's up for anything. So in terms of the writing, it feels like Ninja Turtles. It feels like it came from the cartoon, slightly elevated. The story, again, I was totally lost. So I guess that in the artwork is passable for what it is. It's a licensed title based on a cartoon. It tries to occasionally do its own thing with the art style. It's not beholden to the animation style, which, you know, fair enough.
The artwork really feels to me like when they had a comic book version of Disney characters.
Yes, you've nailed it. It's exactly what it is. We're gonna get close to how these things should be. They're not quite great. There's the references are and there's not really a ton of consistency through and through. But I mean, it's garishly colored because it is all ages, and I'm okay with that. The Ninja Turtles, even as dark as the sewer was on the cartoon, was still well lit. So it's definitely playing into that. And I think that's also just part of the Archie line. Those books, regardless of what the title was, it was, here's your full color comic book magazine. We got all these, we're able to use all these colors. We're going to use them. So it's bright. You can clearly make out what everything is. Like, it's not muddy art in any sense. It's just not going to blow you away. The cover is not bad for what it is. I think the way that they have Splinter rendered is terrible. And I don't think April's rendered very well either. So jumping into this as a random issue, it begs the question, having read this, would I want to read the issue before and the issue after? Not particularly.
If you felt compelled one way or the other, it would be to read the issue before.
Yeah.
Because I would at least feel like the issue before might give me some clarity as to what's going on here. Whereas issue after might just confuse me even more.
Yeah. I mean, I was a little intrigued with the you know, giant floating yin yang, which I know that sounds really weird. I mean, and again, Donnie's always been my guy, so I kind of predisposed to be one to want to follow his journey regardless. But again, I'm not feeling any strong pull. I would have more of a desire to go back and, cause I was grabbing these occasionally off the spinner rack as a kid, I would be more compelled to go back and, cause I believe the beginning of it was an adaptation of the first couple issues was an adaptation of the first batch of episodes. And then it branched out after that. They weren't just doing adaptations of each episode. They decided, all right, we got the IP, we can go off and do our own thing. I mean, they created tons of other characters in this. I mean, there are so many mutants in this series. I mean, every animal you can think of. I mean, there was a whole spinoff called the Mighty Mutanimals, and they had their own long-running series, you know, and they'd cross over. I mean, Archie made bank with this. I mean, they got a ton of use out of this IP, and good for them. It's nice that there was a mass market Ninja Turtles book out there for younger kids that wanted to read it. So, I mean, I'm thankful for that. It's not my favorite version, clearly. But I'd be more compelled to go back and see where the storyline breaks and when they started to introduce new stuff. I'd be more interested in that than just jumping an issue back. I'd want to go all the way back at this point and kind of see where it goes. Because a 6-year run is a long enough time to lay seeds and tell, you know, different stories and then follow up on whatever continuity you've done. So, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
It feels to me like the artwork in the book, excuse me, is to the tastes of a younger reader.
Yes.
The artwork is so that if you bought this for a 6-year-old, They'd sit over the artwork and they'd enjoy that, and it would be their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they really wouldn't know what was going on with the story, but they wouldn't care because they'd have some action shots of them and whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess the theory is the story itself is to attract slightly more sophisticated readers, you know, with going into Yin Yang and Chernobyl and, you know,
yeah,
April making out with the dude and stuff like that. You know, things that a 6-year-old probably wouldn't really kind of get.
Yeah. Well, maybe this was 92. So by this point, the cartoon had already been on for 5 years, and that cartoon ran a long time. I mean, that cartoon, I think it was 8 or 9 years. So there were probably 6-year-old kids that were hitting their teenage years by the time that this series was into the middle of its run. So
I think they were trying to have their cake and eat it too, and have both groups.
And I can't fault them there. I mean, you know, try to get everybody to read your book that you can.
I can't fault them for trying, but I think in the story, unless there's some great clarity given with the earlier issues, I think the story is falling short because it just seems to be a mishmash of, you know, let's throw everything against the wall and see what people think of it.
Well, I mean, in 1992, even if it was an Archie comic, I would still expect a previously on, you know, like, can I have a quarter of a page? Just tell me what I missed, you know? And I thought it was, I mean, Marlowe was still doing it in 92. You'd get a little bit of a see previous issue or bubble, you know, a couple of bullet points, especially because again, if I was 12 years old grabbing this off the shelf, off the rack, and I hadn't read the previous issue, I'd be as lost as I was reading it now. That being said, I probably still would have enjoyed it because I'm not usually going to enjoy the Ninja Turtles, but yeah, it was a little obtuse at parts. So
yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, again, I think they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, but I think they're just having their cake.
But again, it might just be that they might have known what the readership base for this was. Like, I mean, they probably knew that we're probably selling 50,000 of these a month. So there's 50,000 people that are keeping up with this book, you know? So we don't feel the need to do that, because what chances are, whoever's reading this, they're the ones that are buying it monthly because they care about the new characters and the new stories that we're doing. So I don't know. I think it's bad editing to not do that, but that's me. So
I totally agree with you.
So I guess
it was an interesting choice to bring to the
board. Well, I wanted to do something just totally random. And again, Marvel, there's so many Marvel and DC books out there, and I'm covering a Marvel book regularly when I come on here. So I might as well just go off in a totally different direction. I think the last time I was on, I did Rock and Roll Comics. So, you know, and I almost did another one of those where I'm like, let's not beat that drum again. So random Ninja Turtles issue. Yeah,
and it's something that I would not otherwise be exposed to, which, frankly, I always enjoy that. Even if I don't enjoy the book as much, I still enjoy, you know, stretching our tastes a little bit and checking out some things that we might not otherwise.
That's the only way you find new stuff. So
that's what they tell me.
Yeah.
Of course, this whole show is based on the fact that I like old stuff, but that's besides the point.
If you haven't read it, it's new to you.
That's true. And if I don't remember it, it's new to me.
There you go. Even that's better.
That's become one of my mantras, is, you know, the Alzheimer's of comic collecting.
There's only so much room, right? Like something new comes in, something old's got to go out.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff where I have a vague recollection of, you know, the basic strokes, but then when I read it, it's like, oh wow, there's, you know, stuff I've totally forgotten about in there.
Well, I'm doing a cherry picking rewatch of Next Generation right now, and I'm like, Jesus, this show really was important to me because I remember all the good episodes of this. You know,
I had a thing with Star Trek shows, you know, the ones that came on when I was old enough to appreciate it, because the original series I didn't see until syndication. But from Next Generation to Deep Space Nine, to Voyager, to Enterprise, and even a lot of the streaming shows, it's like I start out, the new show is on, I'm excited by it, I start to watch it, and then I peter out, the show goes on, eventually finishes up, and then I say, okay, you know what, now I'm going to go and watch it from beginning to end. And when I did that with Next Generation, there are a lot of episodes that are considered to be lesser, and I really enjoyed them. So I'm not ready to piss on them the way.
At the end of the day, that show came out. What was that? That was spring of 87, fall of 87. So it was right before I turned 8 years old. I going back and going through season one, which I know is not the bastion of quality that seasons 3 through 6 are, I remembered every single one of those. That was appointment viewing for me on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Like that first season and the second season for that matter. I remember pretty much all of these. And then once they started to go kind of more hoity-toity, hard sci-fi in season 3 through 6, I was like, okay, another thinly veiled metaphor, another thinly veiled metaphor. Even at 10 years old, I was getting that. So I, you know, a lot of those episodes to me are not my favorites, but
you know. But you got to admit, the original series had much more thin metaphors.
Yeah, but the show was more enjoyable. I'm always going to be a TOS guy over it.
Oh, that, yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that's my favorite. And as much as I enjoy TNG, Deep Space Nine is actually my second favorite.
DS9 is my second favorite as well. So,
and I had texted a couple of the guys that we did Listen to the Prophets with, and I registered my surprise. You know, I've been doing the treadmill regularly and the stationary bike.
Nice.
So I have to watch something when I'm doing it.
Yep.
So I had given up on Discovery after the second season, and I just watched the third season while I was exercising, and I was surprised that it wasn't as bad as I expected. It's certainly not good.
See,
it was fairly entertaining.
I've talked to Mr. Gene Hendricks. I talked to him quite a bit, you know, every week, because we play Dungeons and Dragons. And knowing what you've told him about Discovery, I watched the first 3 episodes of Discovery and never went back, and I feel no great desire to.
I really actually enjoyed the first season very much. It lost me during the second season.
Yeah.
But now I watched the third season, and then I started watching Daredevil Born Again. And while I'm waiting for the new episodes of that to come out, I've been revisiting the first 3 seasons of that series, because that was excellent.
I was all ready for that, and then they did a thinly veiled metaphor for something that's current day, and I kind of just was like, that's where we're going, so I think I'm done.
My
tolerance for stuff now is zero. Like, I know it sounds bad. Lower Decks, though. Watch Lower Decks. That, if you like
that's on my list.
If you enjoyed TOS through Enterprise, watch Lower Decks.
I had seen the first season of it, and I enjoyed that.
Strange New Worlds is okay, but I this stuff I can't. My Roddenberry original canon brain, I can't rectify some of it.
Well, I'm trying to do an episode a day when I exercise. So nice. If I continue to do that, I'm gonna burn through all of them.
Yeah, let me put it this way: I'd rather watch like The Empath and like any season 2 Next Generation episode over what I saw of Discovery. So there you go. I guess I gotta rate this thing, don't I?
Oh, I guess so.
What's the scale again? I never remember.
The school grades, A through F.
School. Cover. C-, interior art, C-, story, D, because I was totally lost, and I think I'm being generous. And again, and I know exactly what kind of book it is. I think that's a fair grade. Had I read the issues before, maybe the story would have been better.
Did you give it an overall grade?
C-.
Okay, I'm going to barely
pass.
I'm going to be only the slightest bit more generous than you on one of them. I'm going to give the cover a C. I don't think it's that bad. The interior art, I'm also going to say a C, because it's competent for what it is.
It's functional.
And the story, I'm going to say a D also, because it's just, it's not only difficult to follow, but even, you know, with a synopsis, it's still difficult to follow.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
overall, I'm going to give the book a D.
Sorry for bringing a stinker, but
they can't all be winners. And if you're going to do books at random, that means some of them aren't going to be the best.
Yep.
But it's, as we said, it's good to be introduced to something new. Now, yep. I'm bringing something old, and then later on, maybe we'll get a comic that I borrowed and maybe one that's blue. But for the time being, I went with Silver Surfer number 16. So this has a release date of April 10th, 1970, and a cover date of May of 1970. It is written by Stan Lee, penciled by John Buscema, inked by Chick Stone, lettered by Sam Rosen, and edited by Stan Lee. And the synopsis in the Marvel Wiki, so we're going to both steal synopsises today, is that the Silver Surfer is overcome with a premonition of danger as he soars over the Earth. This is for good reason, as Mephisto is once more planning an attempt to steal the Silver Surfer's soul. And what better way to spend your time? He travels to Earth, disguising himself in human clothes and walking amongst the humans until he can call forth the Surfer. He quickly tires of the humans and creates a violent storm to ward off the crowds. Mephisto then summons the Surfer to come to him. He gives the Surfer what he wants most, freedom from Galactus's barrier. While suspicious of Mephisto's intent, the Surfer is surprised to finally be able to leave the Earth. He quickly returns to Zen-La, but is shocked to find his beloved Shalabal has been captured by Mephisto. Returning to Earth, the two engage in an intense battle that attracts the attention of Nick Fury. Mephisto tells the Surfer that the longer he resists him, the more Shalabal will suffer. The Surfer agrees to do his bidding in order to save her. Mephisto orders him to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. so that Shalabal may live.
Dastardly. Now,
this is one that... Well, you know what? I just want to describe the cover, because the cover is relatively close-up shot, you know, full-body shot of the Surfer and Mephisto actually engaging in a hand-to-hand battle with a black background that's making the colors pop. You know, the Surfer's white, Mephisto is red. Black background. I think it's awesome looking. I don't think I owned this one until about 2 years ago. And I think I read it through the, you know, reprints, and that was it. So it is, you know, a little bit of an accomplishment that I've been able to obtain this one. I am still missing issues 1, 3, and 4 of this series, and I think I may never own any of them just because they go for so much money. I had issue 1 at some time, and I don't know what happened to it. It still just eats at me. The art in the book, you know, John Buscema, we often talk about the fact that he didn't like drawing superhero books, but he was awesome at it.
Yeah.
It may not have been his favorite thing, but he was great at it. The shots of Mephisto wearing the fedora and the raincoat. He just looks so freaking menacing and cool.
It's like we're not going to call him Old Scratch, but here's Old Scratch walking around.
Yeah, they've played with that. You know, Mephisto was the devil, but then he's not the devil. He's just a demon of the devil, and you know, whatever. So, you know, I like to think of him as the devil directly in a battle with the Surfer.
I mean, for this book and with the metaphysics and the philosophy that we're going on with this title specifically, yeah, he needs to be the devil.
So his plan, though, you know, because you're thinking, what does he need the Surfer to take care of Nick Fury? He doesn't. So his plan is just to keep giving the Surfer things to do, chores, and to eventually just make him, I guess, callous to his own morality, and therefore end up surrendering his soul at some point. But I don't think that's a very well thought out plan, because I guess you can just keep stringing him along. Okay, you know, you did this for me, Shalabal is safe. The second you stop doing my bidding is when she's not going to be safe anymore.
Right.
And he'll just keep going along, because I still think sooner or later he's going to say, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. I can't make countless others suffer so that my one love can live. And it's going to be, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a tough, that kind of moral fight is a tough engagement over a long period of time. It just is. Like, you can get a couple issues out of that. Can you hang a whole series on that? I don't know.
Well, you know? I think that the thought process more or less was to just keep revisiting it every once in a while. I don't think it was meant to be, you know, the total focus. It wasn't going to be, you know, the Micronauts against Baron Carza, where, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on and on. Or G.I. Joe against...
Cobra.
You know, I don't think that was the intent. But I do think that he was meant to be the Surfer's main antagonist. Because the Surfer is presented as such an impeccably moral person, which then goes to the whole thought process of, well, then why did he find worlds to destroy for Galactus? But you got the twofold thing there, where apparently Galactus had removed his prior memories for a time so that he didn't even remember, his humanity. And also, the Surfer was trying to find unpopulated worlds, which directly goes against the fact that he brought him to Earth in his initial introduction. But, those inconsistencies aside,
It's kind of,
I.
it's the gimme that you have to give the premise, though. Otherwise, you don't get any of the stories.
Yeah.
So I'm okay
But,
with the saga sell on that.
I always, this series came and went before I was buying comics, but I always lamented the fact that it didn't last longer. And it was, when I was, I don't know, 13, I met Stan Lee at a con, and each person that came up would stop and he'd talk to them for a minute. He'd sign a book for you. And I asked him, I said, "How come you never finished the story from Silver Surfer 18? It ends on a cliffhanger and you never finished it." And he was cool enough to be like, "Well, that's a good idea. We should revisit that." Like, because he probably thought, "Oh, shut up, kid." But he didn't say it.
You know what though? I think that's a fair question to ask because look at how many titles get started now and then just nothing. You get a couple of issues. I mean, I was buying that Kevin Smith Daredevil Bullseye, the Target, and then that never got finished. It's like,
Oh, yeah.
don't solicit the books until all four or six of them are in the can, please. Like, it's so asinine.
Especially if you're dealing with somebody who's going to have an inconsistent production schedule.
I know
But then they
you
did.
want the but you want the big writers and the big artists. Tell them take the friggin' 2 years, finish the book, then we'll list it. You know? Like, I don't know.
They
I mean, pay
did
them for the
do
work, but
a they revisited the end of the Surfer book in Spider-Man Web Spinners years many years later, but
oh God.
I don't think it was a satisfying resolution.
Well, when there's that much time passed, because that was the 90s, right?
Yeah, I think it was even the late 90s,
Late
maybe.
90s. Yeah, it's like sometimes you have to strike while the iron's hot, while you still get the idea in your head. But I don't know. I mean, you could
Yeah,
have
but
thrown
they
the,
should.
I mean, that could, I mean, you could have put that in. I mean, Marvel Presents wasn't quite around yet, but that wasn't too far away. Like, Jesus.
They could have brought it into the Fantastic Four.
Or the Fantastic, or Black Panther, or any one of those associated titles, or any cosmic title that was going on.
Yeah, really, they absolutely could have. But back to this one. I think the whole presentation of Mephisto is really what just makes this book one that I enjoyed so much.
Yeah, it was
If
fun.
the Surfer in this series, which I think this was a great series, but the Surfer is only as good as his antagonists in this series, because he's presented as almost the ultimate good. So, that could be a little bit boring if you don't give him a good antagonist to
Yeah.
test that good, test that moral fiber.
Yeah.
So Mephisto is obviously the easiest one to do that with.
Right.
And I think it's well done. I think, this whole, like I said, the 18 issues that they came with, I really enjoyed, and unfortunately the sales didn't warrant it, continuing beyond then. But I think, the John Buscema art and just the whole storylines that they went with make it well worthwhile. And I think they were really banking on higher sales from the college age kids in the
Yeah.
series, and they didn't get quite as much as they hoped for.
Yeah, no, I mean, because, I mean, Spidey was still kicking ass at this point. I mean, the sales on that was still good. And that was, I mean, a lot of the college kids were getting their beat philosophy from Spidey. And I think it's also tough when you're saddling the Surfer on Earth, which I understand is the point. He's punished and he's stranded here on this one planet with all of its immorality and what's going on. But it does limit what you can do with the character when he can't take to the spaceways, you know? I mean, he's a
Yeah.
cosmic character and he's stuck on Earth.
Yeah, and then you're dealing with also the fact that he is so powerful by Earth standards
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
that it's tough to come up with a true antagonist, and that's why again Mephisto is
Yeah.
fitting
Well,
the
he's not
mold here.
street level, and you've got him stuck at street level. So what
Yeah.
can you do? He, I
So
mean, yeah.
that's where they should have, and I guess if they had continued the series eventually they would have eliminated the barrier and
You'd have
gone
to.
more past. gone more cosmic. This is 1970. I'm trying to remember when the Kree-Skrull War was. I think that was 71.
Yeah, it was a little later.
And that might have been the thing that might have influenced them to say, you know, we can go more cosmic. Because I think most of the series, you know, except for, you know, the occasional dalliance by the Fantastic Four, most of the series were, well, and Thor being in Asgard, I don't think that most of the series were off of Earth.
No, the Kree-Skrull stuff, the him, all that stuff with all of the cosmic characters, just it was like right after this.
So, you know, I think had this series been 2 years later, I think it probably would have been more, it would have been more expansive as far as the storylines go and probably better received.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder if like Starlin got his hands on this early, maybe. They might have it might have pushed a little more because he seems to have a handle on the cosmic end of
Well,
the spectrum.
look what Starlin did with Captain Marvel. That
Right.
series was floundering. If I did a reading project where I read that whole series, and if you read this stuff before Starlin got a hold of it, it's all over the map. They didn't know what to do with the character,
Yeah.
and it was pretty much earthbound. And then Starlin got a hold of it and just made it cosmic, and
Hey.
it was actually awesome for a while.
Yeah, and again, sometimes it takes the right creator at the right time. I mean, it's the same thing with Daredevil. Now, I like the early swashbuckling, four color, Sakaat Tumi Daredevil. That being said, when Miller finally gets a hold of it, it's a whole other wave, and it becomes it's what it probably should have been the whole time. But again, you don't have that until you have it. So, you know.
Yeah, well, it's you know, you've seen it so many times. Sometimes it works out right, and sometimes it doesn't. But the same thing happened with the X-Men.
Yep.
You know, that series, and I love the early issues.
I love
They're
the early X-Men too.
lame, they're lame, but they're or, you know, they're fun for me. But that series was also floundering, and they didn't know where to go with it, and they didn't know what to do. And then Roy Thomas and Neil Adams came in, and they just got on a roll with it. But it was too late, and the series was canceled anyway.
Yep.
But the books that they did were tremendous. And if that had happened 10 issues earlier, I think then, you know, it would have caught on and would have
Yeah, I mean,
the sales would have resurrected.
yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people say you can start reading X-Men at giant size number one. There's still so much back matter in the first run that I don't know how you can skip it. Like, because there's a lot of stuff that's introduced. I mean, Juggernaut, Magneto, the Brotherhood, Xavier faking his death. Like, there's still a ton of stuff in there that you kind of need if you want to have that clarity for the Claremont run
Claremont and Cochrane and
and
Byrne
Cochrane.
all went back on the old stuff
I
and
mean,
off of
because
it.
the foundation was there, you know, the execution faltered at times, but it's still all right there. So,
Yeah, I
yeah,
agree
no, th
totally.
this 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 was fun. I'm actually curious because I have a passing knowledge of the Earthbound Surfer post his appearance in Fantastic Four, but I haven't read this. I might have to jump back and go through all these and then find that issue of Web Spinners just to see where it ends. I mean, it's only what we got 17, 18 issues. I could bang that out in a
18 of
weekend.
the series, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I definitely be up for reading it if the art is as good as it is, you know, all the
It's
way through.
Buscema through the entire 18
Yeah.
issues, so.
And I mean, he's not quite Jack Kirby, but he's trying to do some of that phrasing and posing, and I dig that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to give my rating. I think this cover is a solid A, almost an A plus. I love this cover. I think it's just so cool looking. The interior art is an A to me. And the story, like I said, you know, the plot is a little thin as far as getting what you're getting the surfer to do, but I think it's, you know, it's a good B story. And it was fun to read, and as you've indicated, it gives you a curiosity to see, you know, what else went on in the series. So
Yeah.
overall, I'm going to give the book an A.
I can't go quite as high on the cover because it doesn't quite have that Surfer versus Thor, which is what they're going for on this. It's not quite as dynamic. I'd give it a solid
B+. That's one of
plus,
the best
though.
Covers ever.
I know. But again, I'm going to give it a B+.
Okay.
You know,
but that one, the one you're comparing it
is
to
an
A+.
Yeah. So I think this is fair. You know.
Okay. And I'm not trying to beat on your rating. I'm just just discussing it.
The interior art, that's a solid B+. I was not confused with any of the layouts, what was going on. Everybody's on model in every panel, which helps. And the story was a solid B. I was not confused jumping into this. And again, I only have a passing familiarity with this era of Silver Surfer, but I knew enough that he's stranded on Earth and Mephisto wants to screw with him. I'm good to go for the rest of the issue.
it's all you need.
Yep. See how easy it is to make comics, people? Really, if you try, you don't have to gild the lily all the time. Not everything needs to be Watchmen.
I agree.
Yep.
And in fact, I could go off on a rant there.
Not everything should be Watchmen.
I'm not going to. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. This was a solid B+. I might have a reading project for this weekend if I have the time. Just like, let me sit down and flip, get through some issues of Silver Surfer because I really did enjoy this.
Cool. Well, I want to thank you for making the time to come on with me and do this.
It is always a pleasure.
We're not going to wait as long for the next one. And I'm going to ask you to do the next Sleepwalker issue
because
I'm only reading them as we do them.
Oh,
and I'd like
to
read the rest of the series.
Okay.
So I don't.
If you like something, you don't have to wait.
Yeah, I know. But I you know what I'm thinking is maybe we'll do this more frequently.
Okay.
And maybe every other issue, every other episode, we'll do a Sleepwalker.
That is fine with me.
Unless you're struggling to find something, in which case, if we do two in a row, we do two in a row, whatever.
No, if I'm struggling to find something, I'll let you know. Say it's the next Sleepwalker, so don't worry about it. Because those are not boxed, or they're all on my shelf.
I have, purely because of the way you brought it to the show, I have acquired that entire series.
All right.
I don't think I spent more than $1 for any.
And look, and you shouldn't. And then again, after we get through that in the special, I know he's popped up in other places, so it'll be fun bits of ephemera and miscellanea to find his other appearances as we go on, because I have only a passing familiarity with him popping up in assorted Spider-Man titles, and I believe he popped up in Captain Marvel as well. So
and the Fantastic Four.
And the Fantastic. I did read that issue when somebody pointed out that he came back. I'm like, oh, okay, there's kind of an ending for Rick and Sleepy. Great, thank you. Right. So,
cool. We'll get to those.
Yeah,
but thanks again for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for everybody who's listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@2truefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.2truefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.